Greetings from the Southern Cohort of the 2019 UC Coro System-Wide Leadership Collaborative. Our cohort project is entitled Best Practices for Leading Campus-Wide Change Projects. And our deliverables include the production of podcast interviews with influential people in the area of change management, theory, and application. My name is Daniel Jeske, a professor of statistics and the vice provost of administrative resolution at the University of California at Riverside. And I'm joined in this interview by my cohort colleagues, Jacqueline Norman, the campus architect and assistant vice chancellor for planning, design, and construction at UCR, and Christian Villasenor, director of academic administration in the office of the EVC at the University of California at Santa Barbara. Our guest in this podcast is Cindy LaReeve, the chancellor of the University of California at Santa Cruz. Cindy will be sharing some of her thoughts on how to successfully manage change initiatives. Cindy, if you'd like to just start by giving us a little bit of your journey through the UC system and maybe a little bit about your background and experience with change management.
Okay, thank you. So I'm the new chancellor at UC Santa Cruz. I've been here for a month and a half, and I came here from UC Riverside, where I was provost EVC. I was a UC faculty member since January 2005. I'm a chemist, and before that was at the University of Kansas. My experience in change management really started in chemistry. I got involved in a group in the late 90s to rethink how we teach analytical chemistry, which is my field, and to move away from a lecture-driven process to one that includes more problem-solving and active learning. And now active learning is a pretty popular technique. But in the late 90s, it was less well known. And so we worked nationally to try and help faculty rethink the way we were teaching analytical chemistry. As we started to work with faculty to change the way we teach, there's a natural resistance to doing that, in that if you're a successful teacher, you're taking some risk to think about doing things in a really different way. That risk can be in the way you're evaluated. It can also be in making sure that students learn all the material that you think they need to know. We really embarked on a process of discussions, examples, and getting people to try out active learning methods in a safe space. Change can have a big impact on people and what they do and how they think about themselves and about their jobs. And that if you can provide some space to either allow people to fail safely or iterate until they feel successful, you're more likely to have lasting change.
Change is everywhere, and yet higher education probably introduces new challenges, and especially in the UC system with its very strong foundation and shared governance. Yeah. What do you see the challenges are in higher ed versus, say, corporate?
And I imagine if you're the CEO, which is the chancellor analog of a corporation, who can say, well, let's do this, and people will do it. And then you will live and die by the success of those visions. I think that the university system is more robust because universities are a multi-layered corporation. I don't know about you, Dan, but I became a faculty member because I didn't want to have a boss. So I think that people working in companies better recognize, yeah, that there's a hierarchy and that hierarchy is what controls the decisions. But I think for us, it's actually a real advantage. It's an advantage for universities. And especially in the UC system, we have this strong tradition and practice of shared governance. I often think more smart people is always better. And that shared governance may slow the rate of change somewhat, but you're more likely to have, through that process of consultation and in-depth examination, more likely to have potential problems surface. And also it's an opportunity to get more buy-in and to hear from the constituents who have to help implement the change. What are the things we should be concerned about?
It is a delicate balance, though, isn't it? In the sense that if you consult too much, it sort of slows progress. You know, the old saying about you shouldn't have too many cooks in the kitchen. So at what point do you say we've solicited feedback, we hear the alternative points of view, but we still need to go forward? How do you manage that message?
Well, yeah, you do have to do that. And so the consultation is advice. And sometimes we get advice that aligns with the direction that we think we have to take as an administration. Sometimes that advice is not aligned with the direction that the chancellor or the EVC or the Vice Chancellor for Planning and Budget decides the campus has to move. And so in those cases, I think there are two takeaways. One is that advice can tell you where are the areas that you need to be concerned. Even if you say, well, I appreciate this consultation, I still have to move ahead, but I now know more about the areas people are concerned about than I did before. And then the second thing is to communicate back, to close that communication loop and say, thank you for your consultation. This is what I've decided to do. Here are the reasons that I decided. And in that way, you're not just receiving consultation and making a go, no-go decision, but you are telling people why you made the decision you made. They may not agree with the decision, but often I feel if we can explain the reasons behind why a decision is made, people will appreciate and understand why you went in a certain direction. It's difficult for university leaders to have to tell people no. I'm sorry, I understand you would like to keep doing what you're doing, but we can't accommodate that. And so I need your help in helping to make a change. That can be difficult, but it's part of what we have to do to achieve our vision. So in the end, it comes back to the vision for the university. If the answer is no, I can't support you in what you want to do, I need you to go in my direction, because this is an important aspect of our achieving our five-year vision for UC Santa Cruz. That's a little bit different than saying, no, we're going in this direction and you're just going to have to go along. We can't help you. It puts things into a greater context.
What are the different types of change a campus might face?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So I think there are really two sources of that change. There's an internal and an external source of change. The external changes are sometimes the most frustrating, but in some ways the easiest to deal with. Think about change to the way financial aid is going to be allocated in the reporting structure that has to happen. Or the more complex situation is where it's an internally driven change. So we want to make a change often for one of a couple of reasons. One is we want to be better, right? Our universities are striving to excellence in all things. And if you want to be excellent, then you have sometimes to make changes. Just as an example, that may have to do with developing new programs or degrees or better ways to serve students or new research thrusts. Right? Many of those kinds of changes might be very positive for some, but might be less positive for others. So at UC Santa Cruz, prior to my arrival, there was a strategic academic plan that was developed that focuses on interdisciplinary science and social work and humanity. That naturally makes people concerned if you don't fit into one of those groups. I'm not doing interdisciplinary work. Does that mean I'm no longer of value? I think if one can help the campus understand, while this is an area of future investment, you can't have strong interdisciplinary work without strong underlying disciplines. That can help to mitigate concerns about those changes.
Change can be such a disruption that sometimes people wonder if it was really well thought out.
As we think about changes on a campus, I think we have to understand why are we making the change, and that changes like budget should be aligned with our strategic priorities. So the campus has to have a shared vision about what direction is the campus moving? What do we want to accomplish? And then we should use our budgets to implement that vision. And then change is a component of achieving that vision.
Can you identify what you think is the most important aspect of communication during the change process?
I think there are two. One of those is to really listen. To really listen to what it is that the people you're communicating with are telling you in response. So communicating about change shouldn't just be telling people what the change is going to be. There should be a strong listening. Then after you listen, you still need to be able to say, yes, I heard you and I understand your concern. What I would want to avoid is hearing concerns, not paying attention to them, and halfway through implementing some change, find out that people who had the concerns were right.
How would a change sponsor or leader go about determining the necessary resources to implement the proposed change?
Too often we underestimate the amount of resources. practice that'll be required. Let's go back to this example of going to introduce a new business process system. You would think, okay, well, there's a cost, right, to buying the software. But that's not the real resources that will be required. It's a necessary step. But you have to think about the real resources of the university or the people that make the university go. And so how much time is it going to take in training and in recognizing anytime you implement a new process, I become slower. Right? We've all experienced this when we upload some new software. It's a new version. The keys are not in the same place. They change the menu. It takes me longer just to send an email in a new. But over time, I adapt. But recognizing that there's always kind of slower ramp up as people are adapting to a new system, and that is a resource issue. Estimate the cost, and then put in a 15 or 20% reserve that we hope we don't have to spend, but we have available if we need extra training. Or we run into some unforeseen programming costs because although the vendor said, yes, this should easily plug into your systems, in fact, we have to rewrite a bunch of code. When unexpected circumstances arise, there's sometimes a reluctance to flag that or to involve the leadership. So being able to make a safe space for people to come forward when we run into problems, that will help in the long run. Slowing down the communication about unforeseen problems isn't going to help them get resolved quickly. You know, another aspect is having this mindset that there may be, we build in a contingency, both financially and mentally, and create a space where people feel they can come forward when they think a problem has arisen. I do think this is a place, if we back up to, you know, the discussion on consultation, spending some time to really be thoughtful about a change and the pitfalls, the potential pitfalls or the potential problems in implementing a change, some additional work on the front end sometimes can help us avoid unexpected problems as the change is being implemented.
As we've been doing our research and talking with many different individuals and groups on other campuses, we're hearing a lot about change fatigue. What are viable strategies for the campus or the system when managing simultaneous changes?
We can think about change in phases. So maybe we know that at the end of 5 years, we need to be, we want to be at a certain point. We don't have to implement all of the changes that will lead to that point at the same time. We could set a set of priorities and say, oh, well, first we should work on this. And then as this change is really moving from the beginning phase into implementation, then we could start the beginning phase of the next change. So kind of queuing things up so that they run in parallel, but not directly in parallel.
When you're monitoring a change or multiple changes, what do you find most helpful to help you track the changes?
Being mindful of the project management aspect of change is useful, and then setting up a realistic time scale so that we have an idea about, well, this change is going to take a year and a half, and it starts maybe with an RFP to buy a new software, but then there is a implementation phase that involves the experts, and then there's a rollout phase that involves getting the users on board, and then at the end there should be, I think, a lessons learned. If we hold ourselves to doing a retrospective at the end of each change implementation, we can learn from one process things that we could then apply to completely different processes with different groups of people.
So say you're moving forward with the change, you're going in that direction. What are the signals that you look for to tell you that a change should maybe be reconsidered or even terminated?
I think that being able to say, this is the problem we've encountered, and then having the confidence and in some ways the political capital to be able to explain to people either that the environment has changed and so this is what we're doing in response, or if it comes to that, you know, I got this wrong. I got it wrong. And I have learned a lot from that. And I think that the best interests of the campus are to change our path. There are not a lot of examples of leaders doing that, but if it's done in the right environment and there is a strong track record record of positive changes that I hope that people would give a leader a chance to be able to be honest and say, hey, I got this wrong. It's clear that this is not the direction we should be moving. And those of you who said that were right. So we're going to walk it back. On the one hand, could be a result in somebody losing their job. The other hand, it could be met with a respect for that leader that could then get them more buy-in in the future. Probably depends on what the impacts were of getting it wrong. Sometimes I feel people get trapped into a direction. We've started something, it isn't working out the way we thought, but we've invested so much into it, we have to see it through. Question whether that's often the right approach.
So you talked earlier about how important it is to be a good communicator. What do you think are the other important characteristics that senior leaders should show when introducing and managing change initiatives?
I think a respect for the institution is a point of view. It is manifested in the way we communicate, but it is a point of view. So I think a respect for the university and its constituents. Not to be a leader that thinks I know what's best for the university and we're going to do it my way, but to be respectful of the different constituents and open to input. That would be one. Another is to try and manage the change throughout the process. Leaders often are very busy, so have multiple balls in the air. The leader will typically delegate responsibility for a change to someone else. I might say in the case of a new budget system, the CFO is going to lead the implementation of the new budget system. But I shouldn't just turn that person loose and forget about the process. I would want to have regular updates to be apprised of potential problems and also to support the CFO as they're running into difficulties in the implementation.
When you identify a place for a change, but the inertia for the status quo is dominant, how do you avoid being discouraged to undertake an effort to make that change?
Well, I think you have to be really committed. And I come back to the idea of vision and also just a little bit stubborn. So I've over my faculty career tried to implement a few things that met resistance in the beginning. And then if you wait about 3 years, all of a sudden, people have changed. They forgot that you tried it before. And then you change it a little bit, learn from why it failed the first time and try it again. So I think persistence pays off. We have to keep our eye on where it is we want the university to go. What is the vision we're trying to achieve? And there's probably not a single path to achieving that vision. If the path that you initially take, the change you initially imagine to achieve some goal hits a roadblock or isn't going to be bought into, then I think it's a good chance to pull back and try and take that experience into account and think, all right, well, the freeway's closed. How do I take a side road to get to where I want to be? It may mean that also you haven't gotten the right advocates for the change. If we're going to implement a new change, we might think that it's the business office folk that are going to be the advocates for implementing a new business system. But in fact, the people who most want the business system might be the customers of the business system. They might be the office folk, off in the chemistry office and in the architect's office, who are actually trying to interact with that business system. So then if we could have some focus groups or some study done with the users of the software, then we might be able to go back and say, well, this is what we learned from the people who are using the software, and we really should reconsider this decision.
I like that connection between motivating the change from the standpoint of what's the vision of the university, how will this change take us toward that vision. One of the quotes I've heard that I like is, leadership happens one moment at a time.
That's a good one.
It speaks to your idea of being patient with what you're trying to accomplish.
Patient and committed.
How about for you and your new position? I suppose you can't walk onto the campus and make sweeping changes so quickly. You must have to take some time to absorb the culture there and the environment and decide rather deliberately what might be needed.
Yeah, I think that's true. On the other hand, there's a lot to accomplish. So what I've done is I've set out a set of first-year goals. I think I'll have much bigger, broader goals that I'll develop collaboratively over the coming year. But my first year goals are more tactical. We need to do some administrative realignment to make an administrative structure that works better and more effectively. I use the word realignment rather than reorganization, because you say reorg, people think they're going to lose their job, right? And so not what I want to accomplish. And one of the pieces of administrative realignment is I want to move position who is the chief communications and marketing officer to reporting to the chancellor. Because I think UC Santa Cruz has got an amazing story to tell, but has not done a very good job in telling it. Then the third thing I'm working on is undergraduate student success. That's really important as a first year priority, because if we want to make a significant change to 4-year graduation rates, you don't see the results of any change for 4 years. So we have to get started on it right away. And we here have graduation rates that could be improved and provide additional support for our students to help them be successful. So then during the year, as we're working on those three things, I want to become more knowledgeable about graduate programs and opportunities for centers and other kinds of change that we can implement as a campus. But I need to know more, and I need to really see what are the great things we're doing now and how do we reinforce them.
As we near the end of our allotted time, do you want to offer some final thoughts on your view of leadership?
Leadership is an assembly of competencies. We think of visionary leaders. There have been a few, right? We can point to John Kennedy and Martin Luther King, people who are really visionary leaders. Most of us are not visionary leaders, but we can still be good leaders by helping the groups we work with set a vision and then in a very competent way move towards achieving that vision. And so recognizing that each of us has a reputation or has a way that people see us, and working to help that reputation be one that is very positive and thoughtful, I think can help us as we manage change. Because in those difficult situations, the goodwill and the confidence that you have built in people that you work with will help to carry you through those difficult times.
That's really very well said. It's inspiring. We can't thank you enough for your time, Cindy. You've been a really strong supporter of UC Coro.
I have participated with a number of the Coro groups, and I get to come to your graduation, so I will see you at graduation, so I'm really excited about that.
We thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye.
The music in this podcast is entitled The Fifth Life by Circus Marcus.